It's October the 10th, 2008. I'm Mike Benedetti, and this is 508, a show about Worcester. Good morning, Brendan. How are you?
Pretty awesome. How are you?
Good. We were supposed to have Steve Baer on this morning to talk about question three, but there was some confusion with schedule, so we're not going to talk about dog racing this week. Hopefully next week.
We could just make stuff up.
One of us could pretend to have a Steve Baer kind of voice. I bet he has a good podcasting voice. It's nice and resonant. I wanted to actually ask you about the other questions, though. Have you seen much advertising or campaigning about the three upcoming ballot questions?
I haven't seen much, and first, I don't watch a ton of local TV, so I'm sure there's stuff out there that I'm missing. But I don't watch a lot of network regional television. What I have seen, though, that was kind of interesting, they do this every year, but this may just be the first year I paid a lot of attention to it, were the voter guides that go out to every registered voter.
Yes.
And there's a pretty good breakdown of each question in there. But what's great is there's like the fine print. If you read the fine print, it basically says that the Secretary of State's office doesn't support any claims of truthiness, right, in the blurbs that are there. They're basically telling you that the supporters of each question could just be totally lying to you in the voter guide that's in there, and the state will do nothing to stop them, which is not too far off from anything you'd see in advertising or read in promotional material. But when you read the question, like the synopsis from the for and against for each question, it's like you're reading about two completely different issues, and they're side by side on the same printed page. I think it's probably the best way for voters to get a look at how different a worldview each side of each question carries.
Yes.
It really isn't a matter of right and wrong, right? I mean, it's a matter of how people perceive the world. And you can really see that, like, wow, these folks over here have nothing in common with the way I view, with question two, marijuana. Like, we just view the world in totally different ways, and that's fine.
The Telegram and Gazette editorialized against marijuana decriminalization today.
Oh, they didn't even catch that yet. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a perfect example. But, I mean, we knew that I didn't share a worldview with the Telegram and Gazette, so that's fine. But it's interesting when you see something that's printed by the state. Kind of have this just weird dichotomy right on print.
It is a great guide. I'm sure that there's a version of this online, too. The Official Massachusetts Information for Voters, the 2008 Ballot Questions. Nicely written little summaries of each of those. I have seen a few no on one lawn signs. I think I've seen two no on one lawn signs.
Yes.
Some no on one bumper sticker. Now, the no on one people, we should note also, are there's an article in the paper last week before, mentioning that the no on one people had about $1.2 million in the bank, and the yes on one people had about $8,000. So I'm not surprised to see more no on one than yes on one stuff. I'm surprised they haven't raised more money, because you would think, it just takes a couple of wealthy individuals who you say, hey, you can save your income tax now and forever after. Just donate us like 1 year of income tax. Like 1 year of income tax from a couple of people is going to like get you pretty competitive on the funding front. Also, I've seen some no on one stickers. I actually saw a no on one sticker on the sidewalk yesterday as I was wandering around. So they definitely are dominant on that. I've also seen a yes on three, a pro Greyhound ban ad on the side of the bus. That's all that I've seen. I haven't seen anything about I've certainly seen news coverage about the marijuana question two, but I have not seen any ads, pro or con.
Yeah, I just, while you were talking, quickly scanned over the Telegram no on two editorial here today, and it ends on a great note. I mean, they actually have this awesome two sentences here. Marijuana is far from a harmless drug, as parents and law enforcers are well aware. And that's interesting, because I am a parent, and I don't hold that view, and I know my parents don't hold that view. I haven't had a lot of experience, child-parent relationship experience with other parents, but I do know other people who are parents that don't hold that view. And I know tons of cops that smoke weed. I mean, I grew up with a lot of people smoking weed that are now police officers. So, yeah, that's an interesting thing for the Telegram. And a perfect example of where Secretary of State Galvin would step in and say, we do not make any claims of truthiness for these opinions. But, I mean, like, here's a great example of the paper record being completely full of shit. But that is okay, because it's their paper.
This actually brings up the question of do newspaper endorsements mean anything in the 21st century? I mean, they meant something in the past when newspapers were essentially, I mean, you know, when newspapers were more or less explicitly partisan organs. Now that their attempt to claim that they're not partisan organs doesn't mean anything. It's not like it's saying, oh, hey, it's all us T&G people. This is how we're supposed to vote. Whenever you're trying to appeal to the broadest possible audience, does anybody care what the editorial board has to say on this issue? I don't know.
I think there are a surprising number of people who do. I think there are a lot of people out there who still have a difficult time making up their own minds and rely upon other entities to do it for them, whether it be, you know, close friends, family, or media.
You know, I saw an interesting Seth Godin blog post this morning. Seth Godin, king of marketing bloggers, one of the few marketing bloggers who's at all worth reading, I think. And he talked about how is it that you can have so many undecided voters that, for example, after watching a debate, you know, and they'll survey a group of 50 undecided voters, how did you think that McCain and Obama did in the debate? And there'll be some surprising number of people who will say it was a tie. And he says, obviously, it was not a tie. And in fact, it seems unreasonable to think anybody thinks it was a tie. He said, what you see here is fear of making a decision is greater than the actual opinion that you hold. Right. So that's what it is more than anything else. It's fear of, or maybe lack of time to make a decision about, say, marijuana decriminalization, in this case, outweighing your ability to come out and say what your opinion is, or your willingness to vote one way or the other.
I think that's definitely enhanced now too. Almost every issue you look at in this country, whether it's a favorable opinion of a politician or an actual issue, it's almost a 50-50 split nationally. That's going to be scary for fence sitters, right? I mean, like the folks who are typically not ones to quickly make up their mind on the fly or just carry strong opinions with them, it's going to be a very difficult time just simply to exist when you're almost guaranteed that 50% of the people you know are going to disagree with you. And disagree with you, like, vehemently. Like, they are really going to disagree with you.
I had a very interesting visit to my parents recently. I don't want to bring my parents into this too much. But both of them are totally undecided on this race. And one of them is basically a Republican, and one of them is basically a Democrat. And they're both totally undecided about the presidential race. And it was interesting to hear them. Because in that case, there was no fear involved. And just their sort of sense of, like, there's a bunch of information out there and it's hard to find your way in it. And I guess them not feeling like their local newspaper or any newscasters were a good guiding hand for them. In fact, feeling maybe skeptical about those guys as much as anybody else.
Right.
What do you do? You know, how do you make up your mind when there's just this sea of information and you don't feel like any of it's that credible?
This is where science is going to save us in the long run, where, you know, now we've always had this process where we have to find what we believe will be the right candidates. Like, in this sea of people, we have to identify the one person who's going to be, like, the best president and do it in parallel so you can make both parties happy. And you got to vet these people out and hope they don't have crazy pasts with, you know, prostitutes and drugs. And there's a lot that goes, a lot in play. It would be nice if down the line we could simply just all have the majority agree on, like, specific traits for an individual, and then literally build presidents up, like, from DNA. Like, from scratch, we will just create our ideal leaders based on the traits that we want them to have.
We will flash clone them.
Yeah, well, on the fly. I mean, and if the first one doesn't work out, we can scrap them, and we can bring up a whole new leader.
I wanted to mention that for the past week, I've been shopping only at local businesses. Today is my first day where I'm no longer under this structure. And I'll have a link to this. It was sort of interesting. The main interesting thing was that it was really easy for me to get food from local businesses. Like, it was actually, the more I thought about it, I even realized it was even easier than I had assumed it was. It was hard for me to get almost anything else from local businesses. Like, it was really hard for me to, like, figure out where to get a winter coat. I was unable to do that. Really hard for me to figure out where to get an external hard drive. These are the kinds of things that I would normally, I guess, get at a big box store at the mall or order online. Probably more order online than anything else.
Yeah. I think shoes are the one thing where you can still find a lot of locally. There's a fair number of locally owned shoe companies,
and you can order, there's plenty of clothing stores. I mean, there's plenty of, like, Latino clothing stores and African clothing stores and whatever, you know, all around, that are, I presume, locally owned. I can't imagine that they're not members of Worcester Local First, but they're definitely local stores. It's just that I feel like they're not catering to, I mean, they're going to sell me something a little bit trendier, and if I want a pair of jeans or a a coat that I can wear for 5 years as a sort of dumpy middle-aged white guy. It's not going to happen from those stores, right? I don't know. It's interesting. Anyway, it's interesting. I would love there to be that store, but there's not.
I think this may have been before your arrival here in Worcester, but I think Maurice the Pants Man down in Green Island was the last of the sort of like mini box stores. Like if you were a man, a woman, or a child, whatever the season, you could get the appropriate clothing. And it wouldn't be the fanciest clothing in the world. It would just be the appropriate clothing for the season there. And it was like this one-stop shopping, and, well, they don't exist anymore.
That's what a guy asked me yesterday. He said, I'm looking for jeans. Where can I get jeans now that Maurice the Pants Man is closed? Anyway, so there's my week of shopping locally. I think that this is going to cause me to, it's one of these things where it wasn't like, there were no huge revelations during this week. It was just nice to realize that I can still shop locally for a huge amount of the stuff that I do. And in fact, I think I do actually, I feel like I have better options of locally owned stores for a lot of the stuff that I'm buying day to day. Just a few of these things, like a hard drive, right? Like it's not like a hard drive is being made in Massachusetts, right? They're all being made in Korea or China or whatever. So like, why not just order straight from China? Why even pay to have it warehoused for a month in Massachusetts?
I think I would be doing the entire city a disservice, though, Mike, if I didn't just mention the giant pants at the original Maurice the Pants Man.
Yeah.
So the Maurice the Pants Man that most recently existed was like it was more of like a box store in a small scale. The original Maurice the Pants Man just sold pants. That's really all they had was just pants, and it was Maurice's pants. But they had hanging above the on the ceiling, they had the biggest pair of pants you've ever seen. And as a child, this would be the reason you would actually go to Maurice the Pants Man, was just to see these giant pants hanging from the ceiling. They could have been an actual pair of pants, but they were like Levi's or something. And, you know, they had to have been like a size like 400. I mean, they were like just the widest pants you could have dressed a Volkswagen in these pants. And it was the awesome. I don't know what happened to them after they changed. They gussied up the store and it became like a more of a traditional retail, a modern retail establishment. It wasn't just about pants anymore. They carried shoes and whatever, a lot more trendy stuff. The pants just disappeared, and I don't know what happened. So they've got to be somewhere. They have to be in storage somewhere. And they'll probably make an appearance, 20 years from now, and the whole world will rejoice and celebrate the re-arrival of these pants. But they were the most awesome thing in the world, and I challenge anybody who grew up in Worcester to tell me that they did not have some fond experience with those pants.
I bet people have photos out there. You guys should put them on Flickr. We got to see these photos. We're going to have a segment of Bruce's Incorruptible today about the Armsby Abbey, but first, Brendan wanted to talk about Pilot.
I don't want to go too much on this because, Mike, I really find that I think this is the worst subject in the world. The most boring.
Let me just say for people who don't know what Pilot is, Pilot is payment in lieu of taxes, or as we human beings call it, taxes. It's a plan to make tax exempt organizations pay taxes.
Yeah, and it's the worst subject in the world. It's the most boring thing in the world, and it's almost become a dividing line between folks who don't want to think creatively about improving the quality of our community and folks who just think throwing money at any problem will make it better. And it's, there's like two things at play. There are some real high level sort of arguments about Pilot that in a way make sense if you can think big about what a payment is. Like, I would actually be in favor of like the Worcester Art Museum. I would never think of the Worcester Art Museum if they said any Worcester resident under the age of 18 gets like, free admission on Saturday, whatever. Like, and I would actually, as a resident, view that as a greater form of payment than chipping away at their endowment. Like, to me, that has more value. So, I mean, I would consider that payment. The colleges, there are some great arguments to be made for some of the universities to maybe take on, high school level classes for students, especially at the senior level. You get AP students, advanced placement students in high schools. They're only a year away from sitting in huge lecture halls in college anyways. You know, it would be great if the colleges did take on, simply because we're doing a terrible job of managing our own resources in the public schools from a financial perspective or a fiscal perspective, if the colleges would take some of that on and give college credit to the students. I mean, that would be awesome. It would just be, but it's totally unnecessary. They don't have to do that. It would just be great if they did. It would be a good exposure in larger numbers to our existing students. And there are lots of examples like that. But what we're really talking about in the city now with Pilot is simply, like you said, taxing not-for-profit institutions that are exempt from taxes in Massachusetts. And it's such a bizarre, silly set of arguments where, you take Clark University. You've got now in District 4 the people rallying around taxing all of the Clark University holdings in terms of property because they own so much property. As if Clark University hadn't bought up all of this property over the last 20 years, it would have been built up and beautified by Billy Breaux and Barbara Holler. It would now, that entire, it's Clark University is actually standing in the way of doing wonderful, beautiful things with all of those, historically relevant properties that they've bought up in the last 20 years. It's a silly argument that is a way for us to skirt having to have a real big boy and girl conversation about how for the last, I don't know, 40 years, we've totally mismanaged revenue here in Worcester. And now we don't have any money. And now the rest of the world is finding out it doesn't have any money, so we're certainly not going to get any more. And we're kind of stuck in a hard place. And that's just not Clark's fault. It's not Assumption's fault. It's maybe it's Holy Cross's fault. I'd be happy to blame Holy Cross, but only because the Jesuits can handle it. That's what they're there for. And I mean, it's nobody's fault, right? I mean, it's certainly not people who in the not-for-profit sector. And this is where one of those really funny confusions comes out, where people hear the term not-for-profit. And then they get outraged when they hear that they're making a profit. But it's like the term not for profit means that you're not going to have shareholders or a board of directors making a profit. Not that the business, not that the college can't make a profit. They're like any other business. They're going to make a profit, and that's where the whole argument falls apart. Where the folks, the pro pilot people, it's usually a group of people. It has been a group of people that clearly don't have any business experience at all. So they fail to recognize that if you do start taxing these not-for-profit entities, they simply by matter by virtue of existing, they can't let go of their revenue streams and let their margins dip simply because the city of Worcester wants them to. So all that means is that they're going to restructure their business, and you can be guaranteed that even if we do take a penny on the dollar from every not-for-profit in the city, that they're still not going to lose any money. So the money has to be coming from somewhere. So the money just won't come into services for students. Maybe tuition will go up. Maybe Worcester will see 10,000 people not come into Worcester next year because the tuitions will be too high for them. And things just are going to shift. And it's a matter, this right now is an example of an older population who is really, really angry because their benefits that they were promised by the city under bad management are being questioned and being taken away from them. So they're going to take it out on other entities looking for an immediate fix. But really what it's going to do is screw things up for the rest of us who are actually kind of happy with, if anything, the way the not-for-profit service the city. I think Clark might be the only institution in the city that I couldn't find something to complain about. And I'm really good at complaining. So, I mean, I look for things to complain about. Most of our colleges and universities, I have nothing to complain about. And that's pretty awesome, and we shouldn't mess with that.
Actually, I wanted to drill down on one thing you mentioned at the beginning, which was the possibility of getting free admission to the art museum. I like this idea. In Manhattan, the Metropolitan Museum, the one there at Central Park, if people have gone to Manhattan, if the admission there is whatever, $10 or something, but it's a suggested donation, you'll notice. And a lot of people will advocate, if you're a Manhattan resident, you should donate like a dime because they've had so much free stuff from the city down through the years. And that's always, I would donate like a dime when I would go in there. I wouldn't mind the art museum changing their admission into a suggested donation in recognition of the fact that, taxpayers of the city and visitors are already funding them in so many other ways. I would,
I mean,
it would be interesting to look at their books to see like if that would actually be a substantial hit to their bottom line or what that would do. But
that's what's interesting is that, what you can look at there, I have looked at their, well, the majority of their tax filings, and anybody can if you want to. This is kind of interesting. I know the Telegram yesterday in their pilot story wrote like a breakdown of what the endowments for each institution are. But if you hop onto a website called guidestar.org, that's, and it's, you can log in for free. You're limited to what you can see per institution, but it's just a collection of tax filings for not-for-profits, which is great to look at because, off the top of my head, I can't remember, but the endowment for the Worcester Art Museum is huge. It's absolutely huge. Their operating revenue, though, is very, very small. So if the city of Worcester was to start, say, hitting them from a financial perspective based on their endowment, which is art, I mean, it's not like they're going to turn over like a Monet for when tax man comes around. They need to come up with cash. That's what the people screaming about, the endowments want is cash. They don't have any cash. It's a museum. They've got art. That's two different. And that's where, you need to have, we need to be having like adult conversations about, what is acceptable form of payment. I mean, I'm a pretty, devout capitalist who thinks that money is probably the least valuable form of currency we possess as humans, right? I mean, time is probably number one. And I mean, that's what we should be asking for, if anything. I mean, because this is a law, right? I mean, this is like state law that we're trying to change just because we're doing a terrible job managing our own resources. End rant.
Okay. The other thing you wanted to talk about was the want ad.
The one advertiser. Yeah, did you see that announcement yesterday? Are you familiar with the one advertiser?
I'm not. I saw this because of the great Jeff Barnard, who I
Yes.
have to. I won't Let me tip my hat to Jeff and say I wish he could be on the show. He's been working on his house, and I guess today he's driving the cab again.
We need to get him a remote. Or maybe we should just have him pick the two of us up.
And record it in the cab. That's a good
Yes.
idea.
I would totally do
We
that.
should do that in the cab some morning. Anyway, so Jeff Barnard, who reads every possible Worcester-related thing, like he's how I found out this week that the In-City Times website had apparently been suspended by
Yes.
the organization that was hosting it. Anyway, that's how I found out from him. I think this morning, him putting out like, here it is, this one advertiser is gone. So this was at a Holden?
It was
Hudson?
Northrop, I think Hudson. That's what it was. Hudson. So the one advertiser has been this kind of regional institution for years now, and I have a copy, a pretty recent copy, sitting on my desk somewhere here. It was, if you think of Craigslist, it was like Craigslist but in print, and it's been around for decades. It's just been like a classified, a paid classified ad magazine. And this was one of those magazines that if you were, a resident of Massachusetts, you would, if you wanted something, anything, the most obscure thing in the world, you wanted, I don't know, like a three-legged dog, but of a particular breed, age, and whatever. It was like, it would be in there. Anything, firearms, vehicles, planes, giants, I mean, everything. It just everything you could possibly imagine. It was awesome. And it was great for, like as a kid, you'd read it and you would just be amazed at just the sheer number of things that existed in the world.
And the things
But
that
it would.
people want, the desires out there.
Yeah, I mean, or the things that people didn't want. I mean, because there was some great stuff that just no one had any use for anymore. And I mean, if you, it was just this mishmash of classified ads, and it was pretty awesome. It was definitely a pretty great thing to have. But it had one of the most terrible business models in terms of competition for like Craigslist, or other online, even eBay, I guess, is probably a great replacement for it. And it was one of those things that you would see at the counter, like a convenience store, and you'd just kind of have to grab because you remember looking at it when you were a kid. But they never made any sort of adjustments as they move forward. And it was interesting reading the story about them yesterday in the Telegram, because it was the same thing you see with a lot of regional businesses or Worcester County businesses. When they go under, they blame it on the internet, and it was Craigslist's fault. And it seems sad because I'm already starting to miss that magazine. I wish I could figure out a way to give them more money or buy the damn thing and keep it running, because they really did have a great model that probably could have been improved upon and been a regional competitor to things like Craigslist, which everyone just says is, well, it's free. Well, it's actually not free. Craigslist makes a ton of money nationally by advertising jobs.
Well,
I mean, they
Craigslist, though, people point out, does not maximize their profits. Like Craig,
No.
Is way more interested in like community aspects of the thing than
Yes.
actually growing and managing the business. Everyone will
Yes.
criticize him and being a nice guy. Everybody will criticize him for being too nice and caring too much about the community
Right.
and not
And
becoming the multi-billionaire he should be.
in the exact opposite hand, you have an entity like the one advertiser, which was just about making profits. But it's a really hard market to make profits in, and they weren't creative about it at all. Classified advertising is one of those things where there's a lot of stuff you have to give away for free, because if you're going to be charging people to be printing like their prayers, that's going to run short in a while. It's, people want to just print those good wishes and whatnot. It's like you can't charge them for that, but they did. And I mean, there are some things for sale that just don't have any value. If you get an old wheelbarrow for sale, right? I mean, you don't need to buy 500 words of text for that. You can put it out at the end of your driveway, and it'll be gone by the afternoon. And that's what makes Craigslist great, is that they seem to understand the difference of things that actually have value, and because they have value, they just getting rid of them, it has value, and the things that just carry no value whatsoever. Like again, with Craigslist, they make a ton of money off of their employment section, ton of money off of their employment section. That's all they really have to charge for, because that alone is enough to keep the lights on and keep the business moving. But so I'm gonna miss the one advertiser, but I wish they had tried a little bit harder at existing in this particular world and not the world of 30 years ago.
Well, let's talk to Bruce Russell for a second.
So I'm here with Bruce Russell, and this is part two of the segment Bruce is Incorruptible. The idea of this segment is that while most people, including myself, if you give them free stuff, we will be disposed to give your business a positive review, even if we didn't like the stuff. Bruce, on the other hand, will just tell it straight. He cannot be bribed.
That's right.
And Bruce, last month, or month and a half ago, you and I were at a Motorhead show at the Palladium on Main Street.
It was 2 months ago.
2 months ago, we were at this Motorhead show. It was a good show. It was solid. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. It was the best show ever. Shows I've seen.
Yeah. And then afterwards, we went across the street, and I had a beer at the Armsby Abbey there. And you got some free colas.
I did.
At the bar. And and then this week we had lunch there.
Yeah.
So the idea here is that even though you got these free colas, you are not bribed to lie about this place.
Right.
Because you're incorruptible.
And one thing I was like, well, one thing about when I got these free colas, I was like, Cole.
So tell the story of lunch at the Armsby Abbey. How did it go down?
Well, it didn't take me too long to know where I wanted. And he was asking me enough what I wanted, if I wanted some, because technically I was just going to get a grilled cheese sandwich. He asked me if I wanted tomato soup. I was like, some tomato soup and some potato salad. And I said, sure.
Why not? How was it?
It was awesome. I could have gone off for more.
You should have ordered more. I was buying, dude. It was my treat. I would have bought you more. I would have bought you another sandwich. Just got to ask, man. Was the service good?
Oh, yeah.
Was the food tasty?
Yeah, very good. That's why I would have got it for more.
How about the atmosphere? What was it like in the place?
It was pretty good because it seemed like it didn't take too many people to know who I was, because it just by my laugh and everything, just kind of gave things away.
That's true. The waiter, while you were in the restroom, the waiter came up to me and said, is that Bruce Russell? Is that the Snow Ghost? And I was like, yes, it is. Yes, it is. How could it be anyone else?
All right.
So that's pretty cool.
Even if I came back dead, I'd still be me.
Even if you were a zombie?
All right.
You feel like being a zombie wouldn't change you?
I could ask him for some dead pizza.
Do you think being a zombie wouldn't change you?
No.
Success hasn't changed you. Being a zombie hasn't changed you.
All right, because I mean, I'm already a ghost anyway, so why would being a zombie be change anything?
You wouldn't have a physical form. Actually, you would have a physical form if you were a zombie versus a ghost, though, right?
All right.
So, are you giving positive review to the Abbey?
I am.
Should people go check it out?
I recommend to go check it out. If you're getting sick of going to the place you're going at, and want something deciding that something else to do, then go check this place out. You won't be disappointed. I wasn't disappointed.
Were you expecting something different for lunch? Or you feel like it met your expectations?
Well, it met my expectations.
Well, Bruce, thanks for sharing your experience.
Yeah, no problem.
And if anybody else wants to be on this segment, all you have to do is give Bruce some free stuff so that he can prove he's incorruptible.
You're right. And you know, once you give me free stuff, you always have a friend in the snow, a longtime friend in the snow goes.
There you go. All right, Bruce. Thanks, man.
Hey, no problem.
And we're back. Brendan, did you have anything that you're particularly excited about in the city of Worcester this week?
I don't think that I do have anything that I'm particularly excited about this weekend. The sun's starting to come up over the trees in my yard, and I think it's going to be a bright, sunny weekend, which is or at least day. That's somewhat exciting because it's been pretty grim all week.
It's going to be pretty good. Actually, this weekend I think I'm going to be accompanying some students from the Bronx who have come up to track down, kill, and then examine under an electron microscope Asian longhorn beetles.
Really?
That should be seriously. That will in fact be focused on the podcast next week if I'm able to pull this off. This should be kind of bad.
Are they going to have any guidance from the Department of Agriculture?
Yes, this is totally legit. They have some kind of ranger type individuals accompanying them. And then they're going and then I think that they're going to WPI to use the electron microscope there to examine the dead beetles.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it should be pretty awesome. You know, also I'm excited this week with the Real Worcester website launching. This is a project of various people, and it's just kind of the idea of like saying, let's have a big aggregator for the Worcester blogs. And people have certainly tried this many times in the past.
Yeah.
And this one seems to, excuse me, this one seems to actually be, you know, doing a little bit better than past projects.
Original content as well too, which is going to be great.
Yeah,
so far, so good with the original content.
Yeah, I mean it's fine, and you know, I actually find that I've been like checking this a little bit. I think that you know I use a lot of RSS. I use an RSS reader and read a lot of blogs that way. But there's some blogs that are kind of below my threshold for. I actually want to be pinged every time the guy puts up a blog post, especially some local blogs. But it's just nice to be like, oh, here's a place where I can like just skim the headlines and, oh, maybe some blog I haven't looked at in a while has put something up recently. Just, you know, keep at the edge of my awareness. That's nice. And it's just sort of nice to have. I feel like it's like another one like Worcesterite.com, another site with a lot of local online activity going on. And there, we could certainly use more than one or two sites actually like that.
There's never any shortage. There's never a not room for more media, especially in this.
Yeah,
I believe that with the Real Worcester folks, the last email I saw go around from Linnea Sheldon, who I think is kind of managing the Real Worcester blog, like it's their actual blog, they're still looking for contributors as well. So if anyone has something they really want to get off their chest on a regular basis, I think Linnea Sheldon is the person to contact.
And this is, it's interesting to me, there's actually two websites that are, two things I wanted to mention in relationship to this. One is, have you seen the Shrewsburied blog?
No.
This is something which I found through Jeff Barnard, because it's at the sidebar of his webpage, Wormtown Taxi. Shrewsburied, this website, they're like getting like 30 comments per post. Plus they have ads. This is like amazing to me. I don't understand how this happened. Like, is it maybe like it's the only site in Shrewsbury, so it's like doing this? Or it's amazing. Anyway, I'll link to that, and then maybe we can talk about this. The other site, of course, being the Telegram and Gazette. I went and looked at their blog section, which, you know, is just kind of like a little bit blah still.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, they've been doing that for a long time now, so it'll be interesting to see a year from now if the Real Worcester site still has this interest from local bloggers and contributing directly to that site. I mean, so far they're kicking the TNG's ass, but again, it's easy to, you know, to have a good first week on a project like that.
The interesting thing is going to, I think, for the Real Worcester, and I think they may have changed things a little bit, but when they were still testing things and in beta, so to speak, it was the way that they were handling feeds was allowing commenting on their side of posts from outside.
That's been
fixed. It was interesting to seeing people leaving comments. Like, there were a couple of comments left to you and I about 508 podcasts that they were, you know, syndicating, that the comments were just, it was clearly folks that had somehow either been kicked off of or migrated their way off of the Telegram and Gazette site. And it was just bizarre rantings of people who probably shouldn't be and maybe aren't let out of their house very often. I cringed initially, thinking, no, I hope this doesn't just turn into another collection of lunatics, which, I don't know, did you actually go through the Shrewsburied blog there? I mean, does it seem like reasonable people talking to each
other? I looked at it a little bit. Yeah, it seemed okay. I mean, you know, one nice thing was that I think that there's two or three writers on the site. At least one of them was very happy to engage with discussion with people in the comments, which is, you know, the way that it should be, right? Like, that's one thing I really dislike about the Telegram and Gazette, the way they do the web, and really like about Worcester Magazine, which is if you post something, a comment to a Diane Williamson article and say, Diane, you're totally wrong about this. I mean, she posts stuff to websites, but I have almost never seen like a direct response from her about something like that. Whereas, like, obviously Scott Zoback or any of the other Worcester Magazine guys, if you give them a direct criticism on the Worcester Magazine blog, they'll respond and say, hey, we're right, or hey, we're wrong, or, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a holdover of like the mentality of like truly objective journalism. We've talked about this before, that, like, you know, I think in the eyes of the Telegram and Gazette, once they put something in print, it is so objective, it is so true, that there's no reason for it to be questioned. So if you do question it, there's absolutely no reason for them to respond, because you cannot possibly have anything to add to the conversation.
Whereas on the internet, the difference between Diane Williamson's column and, say, you commenting on Diane Williamson's column, is the only difference is that, you know, your comment is has better graphic design and more thoughtful and more thoughtful layout than hers.
But you know, that's kind of an interesting thing though, because that is, you know, what you know most people criticize like blogs for and whatnot, that just being banter. That addition of commentary, it's carrying on a conversation, right? And I think the people who get that realize it's a pretty simple thing. That it wouldn't it be a shame if one person's view take on something became the record for all time. And I mean, we just cleared that up in the first 10 minutes of this show, talking about the editorial in the Telegram about marijuana. Their last sentence, their punctuation on their entire opinion is shattered by just me, who happens right. to be a parent and happens to think weed is just fine. You know, I mean, it's but they 20 years ago, if they had printed this editorial, that just would have been it. That would have been the voice for the city of Worcester. That would have been the opinion of record for the city of Worcester, and that would be it. It would be over, which is a sad way to think that that's the way our society, especially our city, existed. Kind of explains a lot, but hey.
Well, I feel like I want to write something like a top 10 reasons why the Telegram and Gazette does not care about the web, because I'm still frustrated by things that they should have fixed years ago, that I brought up with them years ago. Mm-hmm. If anybody has any feedback on these ideas, let me know. This is. I'm going to attempt to write this in a positive, constructive way, because the last thing I want to do is be insulting to the people who work so hard on that website. But
we know if their web help is local now? I know there was some talk about people, you know, finally people being in house at the Telegram to take care of this. Do you have any information?
I can tell you, 2 years ago, I met the guy who did the Telegram and Gazette website at a meeting at the Telegram and Gazette. And it was weird. This was like so weird to me, because I talked to the guy, like he was at this meeting with me, and then I talked to the guy and I kind of didn't want to say my name or my blog, because I was like, man, I've said things about the Telegram and Gazette, which are true, but which I probably said in a way that could come off as being like a jerk, that I wasn't, you know, I may have been unnecessarily insulting in expressing these, but he didn't know who I was or what my blog was. And that's fine. Like, you know, there are a couple of Telegram Gazette reporters, for example, who know about your blog and my blog and who we are and Jeff's blog and all these other blogs. Most, 99% of them don't know and don't care, and it's not relevant to, it's just a bunch of blogs. It's not really relevant to what they do. But you would think that the web guy, right? Like, the web guy should absolutely know not only us, but like every obscure blogger in town. Because this is this right. guy's job, is to somehow make this web strategy happen for them. And it was it was shocking to me that a guy whose job should be to like know about these things. You know, this is like if you're the Telegram and Gazette sports reporter, you maybe shouldn't, you know, not everybody knows the assistant coach of every local football team, but the Telegram and Gazette sports reporter should know that.
You know, the thing that, yeah, I mean, I'm sure the circulation manager for the Telegram knows exactly what goes out the door for a copy for Worcester Magazine, The Pulse, you know, whoever, every week. They just know off, they could tell you off the top of their head.
Right.
They could probably tell you in 1986, like, what the circulation numbers for every competing, you know, paper was then. You know, to think that the web guy would have no idea, not what their competition is doing, because I don't think any of us really, you know, consider ourselves in competition. Just know what people are attracted to, like know what the numbers are. Like, it would be important to know, like, how many people go to Pine Coffee and read Pine Coffee on a regular basis.
Right. Is this a blog that we should somehow be trying to connect with?
Or, you know, even better, look at the collection of blogs that the Telegram Gazette has now. Some of them haven't been updated in 6 months. Some of them are being written by what looks like 13-year-old kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, I admit freely to having some of the worst grammar, skills imaginable. Public schools, that's why. But the but I mean, if you look at some of the things, at least I like to think that sometimes I can put together a somewhat coherent idea. There's stuff that the Telegram and Gazette are putting online, like strictly online, in their blog section, that I have no idea what's happening. I don't know what these people are trying to convey to me as a reader. Even the headlines don't make any sense. And that's kind of scary. it's because, again, it's no longer new media. Like, I don't think a blog is really even considered new media in anything other than an ironic sense now. You know, I mean, we've got like a full decade under our belts. To think that the paper of record still isn't getting it is kind of frightening.
There doesn't seem to be a lot of community management happening there either. I mean, I think that's one of the magical things of the Worcesterite site, is that Duncan and you and whoever else have managed that site down through the years have put together this group of people who are totally able to like carry on an interesting, intelligent, often dumb, intentionally dumb, but usually intelligent conversation about any local issue at the drop of a hat.
That's all 100% to his credit, Duncan, and that's an amazing thing because even if it is just dumb, even if the general IQ of Worcester is not raised an inch, there are conversations that wouldn't happen otherwise.
To be fair, if the conversations are dumb, they're funny in that case. So there's always something good. And it's not just that site. I mean, like Bill Randall and Paul Collier and these other guys have definitely also put together like a kind of an online community where they'll get 10 or 12 comments per post, no problem. And it's a little too you kids get off my lawn for my tastes, but that's just my personal thing. It's like a thriving community of people who respect each other and have intelligent conversations and et cetera, et cetera. And that's why somebody would want to post on a Worcesterite site, or theoretically post on a real Worcesterite site, or theoretically post on the Telegram and Gazette, is because there's like a community there that you're getting the message out to, who are going to be commenting back to you, et cetera, et cetera. That's the advantage over just putting it on your own separate Blogspot account. But the Telegram and Gazette, I don't see this. When I look at the comments there, they're paring it down a little bit and trying to raise the quality, but there's still no community, right? It's still like a lot of sock puppetry. It's a lot of anonymous comments, a lot of pseudonymous comments, and it's still a lot of just like random, garbage.
The majority always wins when it comes to Telegram and Gazette conversation, and the majority tends to always be wrong. I mean, I got into a back and forth this week, and I mean, in an awful story. I mean, the first story that came out about the guy who stabbed that woman, the completely random woman over on Lancaster Street, which is like terrible, terrible story. And you go to the comments, and it started turning into this giant, like, back and forth with people about how the reason Worcester is so violent, so terrible, and why everybody is literally packing their bags and running away is because we have 60% of our population are minorities. And I'm sitting there reading this, like, scratching my head, like, well, first of all, our population is growing. You know, nobody's packing their bags running away. We have almost no violence to speak for. I mean, and it's hard to say that, to irrational people when the headline of the story is, random woman getting stabbed by this person. You know, I mean, so trying to explain that to people that, like, our population is on the way up, and, as the most recent community survey from the Census Bureau, which is 2006, still says that 77.6% of the city is white.
Yeah, so it's a shockingly white city. Like,
I mean, incredibly white city. But you can't. The people are so irrational and so crazy, and totally live in Barrie and haven't been in Worcester in 20 years. They just, they just assume they know everything about the city. You can't have that conversation with them, and then you catch yourself. You're like, wow, I have now just devolved to the level of these idiots, and it goes on the permanent record and this tragic story that I really didn't want to have anything to do with in the first place. Like, but as a resident, I almost feel like obligated to correct some of these people. Like, actually, no, the city you're describing does not actually exist. I don't even think in this hemisphere. I don't think that the city you're describing exists anywhere around in this area. It certainly isn't Worcester. But it's almost painful to do that because you're now forced to interact with some of with literally our lowest common denominator.
Well, anyway, I think I'm going to write something, and it's going to be less anecdotal and less sort of randomly cranky than our discussion of it so far. So people, stay tuned. I will tell you what you're doing wrong, and I will tell you how to fix it.
We need another good note. Like, I just totally brought down the mood. I mean, you had all this good stuff going on.
Hey, HBML, awesome. Yes. There's this kids exhibit, Keenan Cassidy's exhibit there this weekend. There's some kind of show there tonight. There's a nice article about this in the Worcester Magazine this week. HBML, I'm all supportive of HBML. What else is going on good this weekend? I'm going to watch The Breakfast Club with some friends this weekend. That's going to be pretty sweet. I don't know what else is there.
Anyway, that's fine.
All right. Anyway. Anyway, I don't know. People don't realize that we record this in the morning after I've just woken up, and this is why I'm always tired and cranky, and why I'm so much better spirited any other time of the day that you'll see me. Well, anyway,
I'm
Brendan,
literally over here snorting caffeine, and that's why I rant nonstop for 10-minute blocks without a breath.
Well, hey, thanks for being on the show this week. Hopefully next week we'll have Drew Wilson talking about his arrest too. He hasn't called me yet, but I keep talking to him about it. Hopefully we'll have Steve Bear talking about greyhounds. Hopefully we'll have a full panel next week, and it will be just so positive, it'll make Pollyanna look like the Grinch.
Take care, sir.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.